providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we're switching our focus to the energy sector, mostly oil and natural gas, as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report, also writes Eye on Energy, which is a free newsletter that covers simply the fundamentals, the data that is released on a very regular basis for the oil and natural gas markets. Joseph, let's start off with natural gas, because out of the two, I think it's been a little bit more interesting seeing the rise back above $2. Now, again, this isn't screaming higher by any means and hasn't broken out anywhere to 52-week highs, but at least it's out of that $1.50 plus range that it broke down to start this year. A lot of focus has been on inventory storage numbers for natural gas. We recently got some reports this week. Joseph, are the storage numbers, the decrease in storage numbers, are they actually driving this rise in prices?
Yeah, Corey, it's good to be with you again. The big thing for natural gas is we've had high storage because we had a moderate winter and the industry had filled capacity last year. And so during most of, the first 4 or 5 months of the year, people were looking at the comparisons and saying storage is too big. We had a moderate winter and prices were sloppy. Prices are improving now for a couple of reasons. Number one, we've got the U.S. LNG export business picking up. There was a Freeport plant that was out. It's now back on. That's a couple BCF. And so that's really helping on the demand side. And then on the supply side, we've seen the lack of capital spending by companies, the discipline they've shown where they've cut back spending when they can't make money. And the data that came out from the EIA was that in December of 2023, that was the highest production ever at 105.5 BCF a day. The data that came out for the month of April was 95.5. So it shows you how depletion kicks in with lack of drilling. And we're now seeing reports that at the end of May, we may be 93 BCF. And there's forecasts that by the end of June, it would be 91 BCF if prices do not get over $3. So today we're looking at up 11 cents to 229 for NYMEX. And that's because the injection number today of 79 BCF was below what the market was expecting. So we're beginning to see that the injection comparisons are not negative and that the discipline of the industry is kicking in. And of course, when we head into the summer electricity season for air conditioning, I expect we may even see, instead of injections, we may see withdrawals because of electricity demand picking up from everything from air conditioning to, of course, everything we're seeing with technology and the AI world and all of the demand that's coming from the big systems there. So I think that the story is intact. I've been bullish on natural gas, as you know. Natural gas stocks have done quite well. You know, we talked last month about Paramount. It's up, over 25%. We've had others that are up 15, 20% since the last time we talked. And there's still a lot of bargains in the natural gas sector. The oil sector has really had the good run because of the run on to $88, the war premium, because everybody was concerned about Iran and Israel going at it. With that, cooling off, we've seen the price of crude oil come off. We're $79 today, so down from $88. Based on the fundamentals, I think we can go below $75 in the next few weeks. And I'll walk you through the reason why is we're seeing storage rising in the United States. We saw gasoline supplies go up 900,000. They're up 8 million barrels from a year ago. We've seen distillate fuels go up by 600,000. They're up 10 million barrels from a year ago. And total storage is up 9.9 million barrels from a year ago. So we're seeing those injections. The number that everybody was looking at, which was favorable to the bullish case, was that commercial stocks fell 1.4 million. But the reason was that the refiners, the activity level picked up, and the refiners were up 1% to 88.5 from 87.5. So they created more gasoline and more distillates, but also exports went up. So if you have exports up by 550,000 barrels on the week, that's, you know, 3.7, 3.8 million barrels. So if you didn't have that increase, you would have probably had a 2 million barrel or more increase in the supplies or inventories. So that's why you saw the price of oil back off. And I think that if we continue to get reports like this over the coming weeks and there's no big increase in exports, we're going to see inventory builds that will take the price below 75. One more point to make, though, is I still believe there's quite a bit of war premium in there because of the Hamas Israel situation. If there is a, you know, success to come up with a resolution there and a ceasefire and release of hostages and both sides de-escalate, then the war premium that's there, which could be $5 to $8, some of that could get eroded. And that's why I'm saying I think 75 is something we'll see before the end of May. And I think it's possible if there is a, you know, a treaty or a resolution and it's implemented and the escalation is gone and food can get into to the poor people in Gaza that are suffering, then I think we could see some of that war premium dissipate. And that could bring the price of oil in the short term down below 70. But once we get into that driving season in July, we're back to these kinds of levels or higher. And I expect we'll be looking at $90 oil sometime during Q4, simply because demand will pick up. And if OPEC keeps to the discipline, then we're going to see supplies tighten up and demand pick up. And that's going to turn the game on again. And then I think 2025, even better prices for both commodities.
All right, Joseph, appreciate that breakdown. So it sounds like an interesting bifurcation in the energy space in that we see oil prices pulling back and you expect them to possibly even pull back further while nat gas finally gets out of the hurt locker and starts going up. So from an investment angle, do you think that if the oil prices slide, that's going to pull down all of the energy stocks, the oil and nat gas stocks together, or could the nat gas stocks diverge from the oil stocks for a temporary period while we're in the seasonally slow period in the energy space before the summer driving season and summer air conditioning season kick in?
Well, you know, if the market is coming down and oil is coming down, it usually takes all the victims, you know, energy, you know, both the oil, natural gas, the service sector, the pipelines infrastructure area. So I think that, you know, they will go down less than that, the oil side, which had the great run from February because of the rise in the price of oil from under 70 to 88. But if some of these stocks come down 5, 10%, they're cheap now, but they'll get a little bit cheaper. And again, I would recommend that people take advantage of the bargains. We have a section in our reports that we call Topics Now, and we break it down by the five groups: pipeline infrastructure, domestic oil, domestic natural gas, international E&P, and energy service. And we have sometimes one or two of those that we don't have a top pick because the stocks aren't cheap enough. This issue that came out today for our clients, we covered everything with a buy, with one buy, except for pipeline and infrastructure, because those stocks haven't backed off to the degree that they probably will in the next few weeks, if I'm right about this correction.
So just to throw a little curveball in here, Joseph, we talk so much about North American producers, but it's a big world out there. There is oil, natural gas producers all around the world. What do you consider when you do look outside of just the North American borders? And do you see any opportunity outside North America?
Well, you want to go where the geology and the basins are doing well. And you know, we've seen Colombia do well. So one of my picks that we've talked about, you know, in previous months was Gran Tierra. Well, it's reached a new high for the cycle, right, you know, in the last little while. And so we also like, you know, companies that are in that basin in the, you know, in that northern South America. Trinidad is another one that's very attractive. We have Touchstone there, which is, you know, making an acquisition to Trinity, which I'll talk about in the conference call, the webinar tonight, and walk people through it. But they've had very good success drilling for natural gas. And there's a great trend there. Of course, Guyana being the winner of all of them, you know, you've got ExxonMobil fighting over the ownership of Hess's position. So we think that there's Lots of opportunity there. We've been a big fan of Thailand with Valura. They've done a great job with that acquisition and showing people that they can replace the decline rate and that there's exploration potential and development opportunities to grow the production. That stock has been a double over, you know, this year. And it's been one of the darlings for the street on the exploration and drilling bit side. And I'm trying to look for other companies in North Africa, but I can't find anything that I like right now. And in other cycles, I've been a big fan of what goes on in the UK offshore. But again, there's nothing that I can see right now. So I continue to look for basins that are attractive and Canadian companies that are working internationally. And if I find them, then I'm willing to go and see the companies. And then if their size is sufficient, potentially covering them on a research basis and having them come to our conference to raise the flag with our clients and subscribers that show up at the conference.
Well, Joseph, let's also circle back to the natural gas stocks again, just because there's a lot of interest. We get a lot of emails from people excited about the natural gas liftoff here. That always happens. They don't call it the widowmaker for nothing. There's people that get overly extended and then watch it crash. And then when it goes up, it can really go up in a big way. We were talking before the call about some of the hedging that some of the companies are doing. And it's from one standpoint, it's a savvy business idea to hedge some of your production, especially at higher prices. But then it also clips off some of the gains if nat gas is to really run. Maybe speak to us about the nuances around the hedging of the natural gas companies and where you see some of the best opportunities.
Yeah, a lot of the companies, they see the $1.50, $1.60 range that the price is now. But looking into the end of this year and all of 2025, you can hedge now between $3.10 and $3.20 a portion of your production. So companies that want to protect their balance sheet, want to make sure they have enough money for their CapEx. Some of them have dividends and they want to make sure their dividends are protected. They'll lock in 25 to 40% of their production north of $3, and that'll give them the cash flow they need. And then they still have room on the upside for, if there's spikes of $5 or $6 during the winter time or if there's any disruption in supply. So I'm in the camp that, you know, the natural gas stocks relative to the oil stocks are cheap, period. And that if I'm right, that things tighten up and we have a multi-year, not one of these, you know, jerky moves where you get 2-3 good months and then 2-3 bad months, and it's more of a trader's market. I think we're looking at a sustainable multi-year bull market simply because we will have an LNG market, export market starting late this year, early next year with LNG Canada coming on. And if other, projects get the FID final investment decision with a go, then between now and the end of this decade, we may end up with 5, 6, 7 BCF of exports. The first LNG Canada is 2.1. They're talking about doubling that with a second train. We have the Enbridge-backed projects, Pembina-backed projects. You've got the producers behind one of the projects. And so I think the opportunity in natural gas is going to be so strong that the set of these stocks trading at 2 and 3 times cash flow, they'll go back to 5 to 7 times cash flow. And some of them are trading at 20, 30 cents versus their NAV. They will move up to where the value of their NAV is, which is what we've seen in historic bull markets. When you get near the last phase, companies trade around their NAV.
So if we are in for this sort of a bull market, which sectors of the natural gas stocks do you think perform the best? What have you seen in history?
Well, historically, it's the companies that, number one, you know, have growth. So they have, you know, they own their own facilities. So they're a low-cost producer. And then potentially, if they're a small or medium-sized company, they could be taken over in the cycle by larger companies. But that doesn't even mean that larger companies can't be taken over. If you take Mike Rose's companies, he had Berkeley, got taken over by a monster American company. He had Duvernay bought out by Shell. So he can, even his company, which is 600,000 BOEs a day now, potentially could be taken over. So I'm looking at things like Crew, which is in Northeast BC, which I think could be taken over. There's other companies like Petrus that's cheap. Pinecliff is cheap. Birchcliff is very cheap. You can go through. There's a large number of companies that potentially in this cycle could get taken over You know, if the right bid comes in and management supports it. So, you know, I think that, you know, with that capital gains tax going up over a quarter of $1 million, it's not going to make deals happen quickly because I think companies will say, well, I don't want to have, you know, the buyer, you know, the sellers are not going to want to pay more tax. So let's hope there's a change in government in Ottawa. I'll get off my high horse now on that.
Well, Joseph, just thinking about M&A, there's been a lot in the energy space, but if we pivot back over to the oily names, do you think if we see this pullback in oil price, like maybe it gets down to 75, sub 75 into the 60s again, do you think that cashed up larger companies would take the advantage of they've had a nice share price move and use their equity to acquire smaller growth companies? Or do you think they have enough cash built up where they would risk making an acquisition to bolt on more production? Could we see more M&A in a pullback scenario?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've seen that in the past where companies that do have some debt problems or management is getting, you know, older and don't want the headaches and hassles anymore, the regulatory environment, you know, there's all kinds of reasons for the sellers to say, I'm willing to sell now. And in one of the conference calls I was in this morning, one of the smaller companies, 10,000 BOE day type, was saying they continue to look at M&A opportunities. They've got a strong balance sheet, and they're looking for tuck-under acquisitions that fit in their core area. So I'm optimistic that there's going to be more deals. But right now, the difference between the bid and the ask is too wide. But if something happens and the prices go down in oil, and there's any concern by the sellers or potential sellers that maybe they should do a deal, you know, then there might be more activity. But I think that, you know, historically we've seen more deals happen when the market is zooming, because companies look at it and say, okay, what is cheaper, to buy something on Bay Street or to spend the money drilling? And sometimes the benefit comes out with the buy, because the contiguous land, you know, operational efficiencies, all those kind of tax pools are becoming more important. So, if you look at, Tourmaline's purchase of Bonavista, not only was it to get the land and the production, but it was also to increase their tax pools to push their tax horizon out.
Yeah, that's what's so interesting about some of these corporate moves too. You do need to take into account the tax accounting considerations. But, you know, to your point, there's a lot of companies, most of them now, that have cleaned up their balance sheet that are paying nice dividends as well, returning capital to shareholders. Do you see any changes in terms of the yields that these companies offer if the oil price falls, if the natural gas price goes up? Any changes that investors should be aware of on the dividend front?
Well, we're seeing some companies that have, you know, impeccable balance sheets. So, you know, companies like Paramount Resources that was paying 12.5 cents a month, you know, and now they're paying 15 cents a month, so $1.80 dividend. And this was a stock that traded under $2 in 2020. So you're now getting the dividend is equal to how low the stock price was during the crazy market in 2020. But I'll just read off some of the yields from our May 2nd run that we did. Birchcliff yielding 7.2%. You've got Tourmaline Oil. That's a low one. You've got Paramount yielding 5.6 with the new dividend. Pinecliff 6.1. You've got Surge 6.7, you've got Hemisphere 6.0, InPlay 7.6, Petrus 9.0. So there's some very nice dividends out there. Petrus's case, it's a monthly dividend. Balance sheet's in good shape. So you've got to do your homework. You got to look at the balance sheets. You got to look at the management. You got to look at the insider ownership. All those things are things we cover in our report, and the report that we just released today had our review of the insider trading. And, you know, what to us was we found some companies did have insider selling, which surprised me. But in a lot of cases, you know, in the natural gas side more, we saw insider buying. But in the oil side, we saw insider selling.
Well, let's also take a look at the energy services side of it. You mentioned that some of the pipeline and infrastructure companies were holding up better. Maybe they won't pull back as much. Are you seeing any opportunities in the energy services side of the business?
Yeah, the frackers have been quite cheap, and some of the drillers are as well. So Let's start with the frackers. You got Trican, you know, which was a $5.30 stock. It's up 15 cents today to $4.24. STEP had a fabulous report, and they reported yesterday, and they had a conference call this morning that I attended. The stock's up 5.5% today because of that. And then CES, which is the fluids for drilling and completions, that stock's up 6.8% to $6.40, which is a new all-time high for the stock. So, or a new 52-week high. So you've got some very good responses to these companies that are reporting. One of the ones that I think is quite cheap is Ensign, Murray Edwards' company, which is a driller. And the drilling industry is going to be much more active in Q4 and also 2025 because of all the activity we're going to see in Northeast BC. So I think that, you know, people should be looking at those kinds of names.
Joseph, how do you do due diligence on these service companies? What are some of the key financial metrics, some of the key just company nuances to pay attention to that can help you separate maybe the more opportune type of service companies in terms of investments?
Yeah, the first thing I look at is the balance sheet. I want the balance sheet to be strong enough that they can grow and that the companies they work with won't be pressuring them on rates because they know that they don't have balance sheet issues, so that they can knock the day rates down. Second is insider ownership. I want the company's management to have their net worth on the line so that they're acting as owners rather than bureaucrats who are taking a big salary, bonuses, and all the rest. And then three, where are they working? Are they in the right basin? So if you're a driller, you want to be, of course, big in the Montney and Duvernay, and also, of course, with the activity picking up and drilling for heavy oil, which isn't as much of a frack business there, you know, as a driller, you want to be active in that basin too. So, you want to find the right niches and you want to be able to stay on the pads longer. Because if you can be working as a fracker 20, 22 hours a day with, you know, multiple crews, then the logistics and the productivity are very good. STEP announced this morning that utilization in Q1 was 83% in Canada because they had one contract where they were on the well site with multiple, because of the pads that were in pad drilling, 63 days. Well, the efficiencies, if you're working 22 hours a day with 63 days in a row, that's very, very productive. And that's why you can have the superb profits that STEP reported yesterday, and they had their conference call this morning.
So then, Joseph, one step back, taking a look at the equities, both oil and natural gas equities. How right now do you gauge investor sentiment? And have you seen new investors, generalists entering the market? What's your gauge on that?
Well, I think we've seen a lot of generalist interest. The BMO CAP conference in Toronto, the companies I've talked to said there was very good audience, people they hadn't seen in years who hated oil. Now they're coming to the meetings. They're having one-on-ones with them. The energy people who have been there for a long time and supportive, but the generalists have come back. They're now they're staying in the big caps and medium caps. But over time, companies that I've chatted with are starting to have meetings with family offices. They're finding good interest in the States, interest in Europe, hemisphere. Don Simmons mentioned that to me when I talked to him earlier this week. He's going off to Europe to wave the flag because he sees, if he can get interest there and more interest, in the States, because the Canadians, they keep on knocking on the same doors. And of course, if you want new investors, you got to find new doors.
Yes, you do. But I think it's always interesting just to see kind of what the sentiment is and if there are new investors coming in, which it seems like there are, and we can see just how well some of those ETFs have done, pushing to all-time highs and continuing from there, even when oil mostly has been flat too. So very interesting, Joseph. Great having you on the show. We will post a link to the Schachter Energy Report so everyone can stay up to date with what you're covering in the energy sector. I really do appreciate you taking time with us on this weekend show. And everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. Be sure to go back through our website, podcast, and now YouTube page under The KE Report to listen to all the daily editorials and company updates we recorded throughout the week. Everyone, hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.